Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to Ghost in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today is part 3 of my Berkshire series. It is the roundtable. I did this interview back in 2020. It was an 8-part series on the Berkshire's UFO, and I condensed that down for a summer rerun. Today is part 3. I had a blast putting this thing together because I brought together Tom Reed and Tom Warner and Melanie Kirchdorfer, other podcasters and guests. It was really a lot of fun. It was a lot of work, but a lot of fun. In 2 weeks, I'll be back with new episodes on Ghost in the Valley podcast. Here is part 3 of the Berkshire's Roundtable. Joining me today at the Berkshire's Roundtable is Tambre Ross, who is the author, psychic, medium, and paranormal investigator from Oklahoma. Tammy was a past guest and was kind enough to send me an autographed copy of her book to me with love. Beth Garcia, also an author, musician, songwriter, that was a past guest on my show as well, and I am thrilled that she is also at the round table. Beth is the author of The Candlestick, and I bought the book off of Amazon, and it is very, very good. Beth has also written other books as well. And again, all her links will be in the show notes. Beth Garcia is from California. Also from California is Katie Brown. Katie is the host of Word on the Rocks podcast, a podcast on the paranormal and true crime. Sitting next to Katie is Jason Horton. Jason is the host of Strange Year podcast and also Ghost Town podcast, which Jason co-hosts with Rebecca Lieb. Jason also is an author, and his new book just came out, and it's called Abandoned and Historic Los Angeles, Neon and Beyond. His book is also available on Amazon. Jason also living in California. And sitting next to Jason is Pastor Carla Davies. Carla is a huge fan and follower of my show, and Carla just happens to be my sister. I'm proud to say Carla is a fellow Buckeye from the great state of Ohio. Sitting next to Carla is Cindy Martinez. Cindy is a past guest and also the host of Welcome to the Neighborhood podcast, a podcast on the paranormal and true crime. Cindy is from the Windy City of Chicago. And sitting next to Cindy Martinez is Paula Bianchi. Paula also is from California, from the San Francisco Bay Area. Paula is the writer of the blog Lucy in the Afterlife, and that can be found on thisweirdchicksblog.com. And I highly encourage you to go to that website and check out everything she has to offer there. Paula Bianchi was also a past guest on Ghost in the Valley podcast. Welcome, Paula, to the roundtable. And of course, sitting with me at the head of the roundtable is Tom Warner. Tom Reed, and Melanie Kirchdorfer, and they will be answering questions and also a few of their views. So let's get started right off the bat, and we're going to open with Tambre Ross.
The story of the Berkshire UFO was extremely intriguing and even very emotional for me. As I watched this episode, I found myself having more questions than I had answers. You know, my heart does go out to each individual that had their own experience with regard to the anomalies and things that occurred that night in September 1969. You know, reviewing through that episode, you have here five individuals, six if you want to count Miss Shaw, that all experienced an unusual incident and or anomaly, of blinding lights, lights coming out of the sky and shooting down, levitation, even complete, you know, transporting into another area, another dimension, if you will. So you've got four kids and two adults that are all experiencing the same thing, yet different things in various parts of Great Barrington. Like I said, these stories are similar and even different. You know, you have Tom and Melanie. Both had been teleported, if you will, onto a ship of some kind. They both reported the lights were so bright. They were blinding lights. They had no recollection of how they got there, let alone where they were or how long they had been there. But each one had been teleported back in much of the same way, with Tom being teleported back to his front yard, which is where he remembered being when it first happened, and Melanie being transported someplace completely different than she remembered being in when it happened. So, I mean, it's kind of crazy, but yet, you know, it's totally, for me, believable because these kids didn't even know each other really at the time of this incident, and Tom remembered catching a glimpse of her on the ship. Every individual that witnessed this incident, they all have one major thing in common. They were all missing time. With Nancy Reed, she was with her family in the car. They were sitting on the bridge when they literally got stopped because of these bright lights coming from the sky. She was in the car with her two kids and her mom. They reported losing 3 hours. 3 hours. No memory of what happened to them. It was like they blinked their eyes and it was over. But what was extremely unusual is when they came to, Nancy's mother was actually in the driver's seat of the car. Now, Nancy's mom didn't drive, so how did she get in that driver's seat? Jane Green, she reports contacting the DJ, Tom J., and, wanted to give a report of what she had been seeing, and she even couldn't believe it herself. And so Tom J., you know, he kind of dismissed it until he started hearing other reports coming through his radio or through his scanner. I found it almost too convenient that both the radio station and even the police department have absolutely no record of any other claims. I find that extremely convenient. You know, I believe with my whole heart that this incident occurred. These things happened to these people, and it was covered up. Nancy Reed became so emotional, and I could feel that emotion, and it really broke my heart. Her son had expressed what had happened that night, and he had told friends, and other people found out about it. Well, his family was bullied because of their experience, so much so that Nancy Reed had to pick up and move her family for fear of safety. So, you know, it horrified me when I heard the things that were being said and being done to this family, all because of experience. So, you know, yes, people don't understand something, so they try to justify it with another explanation or solution, but in doing so, they often can hurt the people whom experienced the incident. So it was an awesome, awesome episode. And again, you know, I'm grateful to them for standing up and speaking out about what happened that night in September of 1969. Because, you know, there are other people who have gone through, you know, similar things just like that, or maybe something completely different, that might be a little bit braver to come forward and be able to tell their own story.
Thank you, Tambri. I really appreciate that. That was excellent review of the Berkshire's UFO. Now let's hear from Jason Horton.
Even when I was younger, I was obviously familiar with unsolved mysteries, like culturally, and maybe caught some episodes. But then I think when it came on, I was like, all right, I'm definitely looking into this. I'm curious what's, you know, with a podcast thing and true crime and documentary, doing their kind of modern take while still keeping the unsolved mysteries brand there. You know, we covered three out of them. Kind of picked three that resonated with us. And it's interesting that the Berkshire's UFO episode is the only one that's not crime based. And I found that like an interesting thing that they did, that five out of six was, you know, about loss. And then you have this interesting one that's just really interesting, that really stood out. I don't want to be disparaging and make light of anything, but it is a bit of at least a little bit of a palate cleanser in the show, depending on what order you watch the episodes in. I talked to Tom Reed and commented on it, and then I gave him my email, and he sent some, you know, I was like, if there's anything else you want me to add to it, you know, so I just added some more information about, you know, the park and the kind of as far as what the town is concerned. It's not always good or bad. It's just interesting. And I was like, yeah, I'm happy to share anything you want me to share, since we're talking about you. And I believe that's only fair. And it's not for me to, again, I would never twist it around. And it's not really for me to like change my point of view either. But it's like, I want to be respectful and present information, especially if it, you know, if it helps you and I'm talking about you, it's a very least I can do. You know, I could be a bit of a skeptic. I'm always open to hear things, because I still find things so interesting. So I never want to do anything to stifle people from doing that. If other people enjoy it, I don't want to stand in the way of that. That episode is one, in fact, my wife and I, we really got into it about that one out of all the episodes. I mean, we were like, because I was a little bit more on the side of the skeptic and she was a little bit less, although we agreed and disagreed on stuff. So that episode was very polarizing in this household.
Thank you, Jason Horton, podcast host for Ghost Town Pod. Actually, I learned about the Berkshire UFO off of their episode on the Berkshires, and turned me on to the Netflix series. So thank you, Jason, for your input on the show and the Berkshires. And coming up next is Katie Brown. She is the podcast host of Weird on the Rocks, and this is Katie's take of the Berkshires UFO.
Hey, this is Katie from the Weird on the Rocks podcast. I just finished watching the Berkshires UFO episode of Unsolved Mysteries, and I would love to share some of my thoughts on it. So I hadn't previously heard of this particular event. I've heard of other well-known UFO encounters. The first one that comes to mind is the Phoenix Lights incident that happened in 1997, where thousands of people across Arizona witnessed a UFO. I'm sure most of you have heard of that one too. But I hadn't heard of this particular occurrence in the Berkshires. The first thing that really stood out to me is really just like how normal and kind of all American these people all look and seem to behave. This took place in a small, normal little town, and I think that makes it seem even more believable. At least for me anyway, I also live in a small kind of rural woodsy area. So I immediately kind of, you know, put myself in these people's shoes and thought about what my reaction would be to something like this in my small town. The anecdote that really stuck out to me was of the boy who was coloring at a neighbor's house, I believe. And then all of a sudden he felt this strong urge to run out of the house and to go home, like a voice was telling him to leave. He thought that he was running home, but his friend said that he was actually just frozen in place and was running in place in the front yard, which I'm sure from a child's perspective was absolutely terrifying. Then he saw the UFO and its light kind of like engulfed him. And then the next thing he remembers, he was on a ship of some sort. He also remembers seeing a girl named Melanie, who is also interviewed for the show as an adult. And although she didn't see him on the ship, she remembers being on the ship too. I think the fact that they both remember this so vividly and can kind of match up their details of the ship all these years later kind of just shows that there's definitely some truth to what they're saying, at least that's what I believe. Melanie also states that she met Tom, this guy that was on the ship, years later under different circumstances, and that she felt an immediate connection to him, which I think is just really cool. Even though she doesn't remember seeing him on the ship, they shared this experience somehow. I absolutely believe all the people that were interviewed for the show, and I think that they definitely really saw a UFO. The fact that so many people from across the county...
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
He remembered the exact same thing on the exact same night is really, I mean, just undeniable. It's also really fascinating how people were calling into the radio station that night, but there were no police reports of the event. I think that when something bizarre and unexplainable like this happens, that people kind of, you know, doubt their own minds and their own judgment, and that calling a place like a radio station might have felt like a safer, more like neutral option, or perhaps like they wouldn't be judged by, you know, the station's host, like maybe they would be by the police who might come out and question them and think that they're crazy. One of the guys interviewed was saying that he told some people his story later, but that over time he realized that it kind of made people uncomfortable and he stopped talking about it because he didn't want to scare people away or be considered, you know, the weird kid in school, which I totally understand. I think that with things like this, people tend to hide it and keep it to themselves, you know, in fear of ridicule. And then they don't know until years later that other people had the same experience. It's probably very isolating feeling, I can imagine. I can only assume that being part of this show probably was kind of like a relief for these people because they can finally talk about it openly and with others who saw the same thing. I mean, I definitely believe in aliens and I would love to see a UFO like this, but I mean, in actuality, I don't know if I would share it with people because it really is kind of inviting others to judge you and think you're a wacko. It kind of makes me wonder how many other things like this have happened and there are witnesses, but people are just too afraid or unsure to come forward and talk about it. This whole story also reminded me of a movie that I recently watched on Amazon. It's an Amazon original, I believe, and it's called The Vast of Night. It's set in the 50s and is about a small town where one night people start witnessing something strange in the sky, just like what happened to these people, and they start calling into the radio station to report it, just like with these people. It was really good and had like a really kind of cool, like eerie vibe to it. So I would definitely recommend it if you're into this sort of thing, which if you're listening to Al's podcast, you probably are. So, all right, well, that's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you, Katie. Katie and I started out about the same time last year in podcasting. So she's been a past guest on the show. It's always nice hearing from Katie, and she has a really great podcast, Weird on the Rocks. Coming up next is another past guest. She is an author. She's a songwriter. She has a very creative mind out of California, and this is Beth Garcia.
The Berkshire UFO series was actually amazing to watch. I could relate to how people would not believe their story. It tends to happen when people doubt UFOs or ghost stories because they haven't been there. They've never experienced it. But I understand how they want to tell their story and get it out there so people can say, hey, you know, maybe there is something that's really going on. I'll tell you an example. I was a kid in L.A., and we were driving down the freeway, and I was with my dad. And on my right-hand side, I looked out, and there was a silver, round UFO that was hovering. And I looked over to my dad, and I said, did you see that? What is that? And he said, oh, that's the sun. And I looked out his window, because he's on the driver's side, and there was the sun on that side, not on the right-hand side where my window was. And then all of a sudden, it hovered some more and then shot up straight up into the clouds. So I do believe the Berkshire UFO happened, and I'm glad that they told their story to get it out there for more people to not be afraid to tell their story as well.
Thank you, Beth. And Beth will be back later on in the show with some questions. And we will have a section for Tom Reed, Tom Warner, and Melanie Kirchdorfer. Sitting next to Beth Garcia is Cindy Martinez. Cindy is the host of Welcome to the Neighborhood podcast. Cindy is out of Chicago, Illinois. Her podcast is on the paranormal and true crime. So this is Cindy's take on the Berkshire's UFO. Also, Cindy will be back later in the show with questions for a couple of our guests as well. Cindy Martinez.
Hi, I'm Cindy. I'm from Chicago, and I'm the host of Welcome to the Neighborhood podcast. Well, first of all, I'm glad to see that Unsolved Mysteries is back, and it's being produced with a modern take on it. Growing up, that show covered a lot of things that piqued my interest that have stuck with me to this day, so I hope to see more episodes in the future. Now, something I've grappled with ever since I was a kid is that feeling of being so small and insignificant in this vast universe. And a lot of that anxiety and fear stemmed from partially the idea of extraterrestrials and UFOs. Not so much the idea, but I knew and I felt that they were real. And this new UFO episode on Unsolved Mysteries is coming at a time where those things have been confirmed in a matter of speaking by U.S. intelligence earlier this year. Not only that, but 1969 was a very turbulent year, and it goes without saying that, so is 2020. The conversation of UFOs has always been highly disputed. A lot of people would rather dismiss it than give it the time of day. And what's crazy is that a lot of the stories from people who have allegedly seen a UFO or been abducted, a lot of little details do tend to line up. And there's so much footage and photos and documented stories out there now, it's hard to deny it at this point. Mostly beyond my curiosity, I feel sympathy with the people who experience these abductions. Not only because of their experiences and having little memory of what happened, but the backlash and discreditation they received from their peers and fellow civilians, especially the family from New York. It really showed how ugly it can get when your ordeals are rebuked and how easily crowds join to form a bad opinion of you. It goes beyond shunning, it's downright bashing. The human way to react to things that are unordinary or not easily explained is to reject it and, in a sense, demean it. And it's not fair because things like this happened all over to several other people even before this incident. And it's also quite unfair that there's little to no record of what happened that night when it's obvious that too many people experienced it for it to be a lie or a coincidence. I am curious as to what it was specifically about the people that were abducted that made them quote-unquote chosen. Was it random, coincidental, or was there something about them that made them stand out? I also can't help but notice that quite a few of them were children.
Thank you, Cindy Martinez, from Welcome to the Neighborhood podcast. We will have some answers from our special guest, Tom Warner, Tom Reed, and Melanie Kirchdorfer, along with other questions from Cindy and other of the guests coming up. Also will be some emails I received with their remarks and questions. We have a lot more to come. Now comes the part of the show where our special guests, Tom Warner, Tom Reed, and Melanie Kirchdorfer, will answer questions that were sent to me via email and also from our friends here at the Roundtable. So let's continue with Cindy Martinez and a few of her questions.
I'm more interested in Melanie's story, her waking up by the lake, away from her family's car, and having to walk home. I'm wondering what her parents thought or remembered. She said her sister believed her, but what about the parents? What was their experience realizing that she was no longer in the car? And how long was she gone?
As far as waking up, I have no idea how long I was on the lake for. I know that I woke up when the sun was coming up. And that would have been whatever time the sun starts coming up in the morning on Labor Day weekend in the east. And I did not have a watch on, so I have no idea. The last thing I would have done would be to look at a watch at that time. I mean, I was 12 years old. Who's going to look at a watch after going to an event like that? That's the last thing that would have been on my mind. I was so frightened, and I had stomach pains. I woke up on the lake. I have no idea how long I had been lying there for. I know that I just had shorts on and a lime green shirt, sweatshirt on, and I had horrible stomach pains. I walked home. My parents' back door was unlocked, something my mom never did. And I was shocked that the door was unlocked because my mom is scared to death to leave the doors unlocked. So I walked in. My parents were there. They don't remember how they got home. My sister was like, "Where have you been?" I told her, and we never talked about it. I have a letter in front of me that my mom had written to me at one point that says that when we arrived home, we never, ever discussed it after that. It was something that we never talked about because we don't even remember how we got home. She talks about how it was red, a red glow, reddish-orange glow in the sky as well, and how frightened everyone was, and how she just remembers how other people won't talk about it either. It was just a quick note that I have that she had from when I was going through my PTSD hypnosis. I was able to get that out of her. It was like pulling teeth to get that out of her because nobody wanted to talk about it. We weren't allowed to talk about it. Like I said, I was punished for it. But I did get that out of her through my sister, and I hope that helps.
Tom Warner's story probably shook me the most. They were all interesting and unique in their own right, but with Tom specifically, it was as if he lost control of his body with the voices and emotions that were put there and the running in place for 5 minutes before the UFO and the light showed itself, and even when he was being brought back. So there was definite telepathy and perhaps telekinesis involved here, which is frightening for an adult to go through, let alone a child. I do have some questions for Tom, and I'm not sure if he can answer them, but do you know what happened to you while you were abducted, or do you have a theory as to what happened?
I did have a memory of a table, so was I on the table? I couldn't tell. My memories, as I said before, were one seeing Melanie, then seeing other kids, always looking down anytime I saw a face. It was just too much for me. And then seeing what looked like a strange person, which I looked at as a human alien hybrid, and then one that looked like an alien, which I had done a drawing of, which, by the way, my father, not long after I did the drawing, my father covered up the wall in the garage, which was just recently, I just recently did the renovation on the garage, and I was like, whoa. I think the first time I was just tagged. I don't think anything major was done, tagged, whatever. Was it how they did it? I don't know.
The whole incident lasted about 7 minutes, but did it feel longer to you?
No. If someone actually looked at me gone, and then I'm gone, and then 7 minutes later down, I have to assume that that was 7 minutes. 2 weeks later when it happened, we lost approximately 45 minutes of time. So, whew. I could have done a whole lot in 45 minutes.
How long after your experience did you meet other people who also experienced similar things?
Outside of my own family, 3 years later when I was 13, I was swimming off of a dock. This one other boy looked at me because we're 13. He says, "You know about UFOs?" I said, "No, I don't." He said, "Yes, you do." Said, "No, I don't." "Yes, you do." I said, "How would you know that?" He says, "Because I was on that UFO. And I remember you and your brother." I would say, yeah, 13.
Before your experience, what were your feelings and thoughts of the possibility of the existence of UFOs and extraterrestrials?
Never even thought about it. I never even gave it a thought because the only time I ever heard of a UFO, my father told us about him up at Lake Champlain a month before it happened. I didn't even know what he was talking about. I thought it was kind of bizarre, the story he was telling me. I'd never thought about life forms outside of Earth. I mean, because we were never taught that that could be even a possibility. Though I had this mental telepathy that I felt like I was talking to someone from another planet. I didn't really give it any thought that, you know, another something would fly in and just drop out of the sky. It just was very, very surreal, you might say, when it happened, because it was like, it's just something you don't expect. You don't plan on it when you're 10 years old, you know?
Thank you, Tom Warner, for your answers to Cindy Martinez's questions. The last question from Cindy is to Tom Warner and Tom Reed.
So was there anything you said in your interview for the show that was edited out that you feel might be important to your story?
Okay, Tom Reed, we'll let you go first.
Yes, our entire case was cut out. How it was mentioned at the United Nations, the official documents that officially inducted our family into the United States, as well as the monument that was unveiled in our family's honor. That was a beautiful tribute to my late father.
Tom Warner.
The whole thing about the Berkshires, it was talking about, and this is where I think they did a fantastic job, is they wanted to tell the story of how a UFO came into a community like the Berkshires, and how it affected the people around there. So in that instance, I think they did a great job. I would have liked them to do another one showing other aspects of it, how the connection was to Lake Champlain. But I think that would have been a little confusing to the audience. They wanted to show how that affected Great Barrington and Sheffield, because most of the cases were right here. So I was more than fine. I thought they did a great job. I really do. I think, you know, the director, all the way around, Josh Kessler did a great job, and Susan Nguyen, who personally handled people, Marcus Clark, of course. You know, there's no one that didn't do a great job. It was A+ all the way.
Thank you for your time. Thank you for coming forward with your story and for being resolute with it. I don't doubt your experiences for a second. And thank you, Al Cooley, for allowing me to participate in this series.
Thank you, Cindy Martinez, from Welcome to the Neighborhood podcast. And now a question from Beth Garcia, author, musician from California. Beth?
Yes, I have a question for either one of you. I would like to know, after the abductions and you were put back where you were placed, did you have any physical signs of it, or did it change your health in any way that you know of? Thank you.
Yeah, Melanie Kirchdorfer, would you like to answer that one first?
As far as any ailments that were left behind, I used to have, and I still do, too, horrible stomach pains after any incidences that took place, really bad stomach pains. My dad used to have to take me to the doctors. And also sinus problems, very bad sinus problems. I ended up actually having sinus surgery at one point, and also my eyes. I've had tear duct surgery done as well, and my tear ducts were very scarred, as well as my sinuses were very scarred. I set alarms off all the time and shut down computers. It's quite annoying. Today I was in the parking lot at the Big Y, and I set a car alarm off for about 10 minutes. Finally, the owner came out and I had to shut the alarm off. It can be very embarrassing. It's not funny. It's annoying because I never know when it's going to happen. I can't go into some stores. It doesn't happen all the time, but it happens at least once, twice a month. I can shut the cash registers down sometimes, or the conveyor belts, and going through the airport is very annoying. Okay, I hope that helps. This hasn't been a fun adventure, let me tell you. But I have met some interesting people. That's the good part.
Tom Warner?
Thank you, Beth, for asking that question. When it first happened, of course, the feeling was, you know, I was experiencing adrenaline. When you're 10 years old, you don't have a lot of instances where you're feeling adrenaline. Actual physical change in me, myself, I didn't really feel anything different other than an enhancement in mental telepathy.
And Tom Reed?
I say physically, no. It was more psychological. And because it was psychological, yes, our behavior changed a little bit. We weren't quite ourselves.
Now we're going to hear from Carla Davies. She is my sister, and she is from Girard, Ohio.
Hi, my name is Carla. I'd like to make a few comments and ask a few questions regarding the Berkshire UFO interviews that came about from the Unsolved Mysteries episodes. My first question, I guess, would be for Tom Warner. He said he heard a voice, thought maybe it was God, telling him to go home now. Just wondering how he felt about that now after thinking about it.
The voice, you know, you got to remember I was raised Catholic. So, you know, that when all of a sudden you hear this, you assume that it's from God. But it didn't take me very long to realize that it was from whoever was controlling those messages, mental telepathy, probably from that spaceship.
The voice also said, I'll be done in a minute.
When they said that, I figured that they were somehow tagging me somehow. I didn't know how. Obviously, they were holding me in place, so they weren't done with doing what they wanted to do. I wasn't being hurt, but at the same time, being frozen into place and immobilized, laying on the ground in a beam, you wonder, what are they doing? I was seeing if I was feeling anything, but I wasn't feeling anything. So I just assumed that this was a higher way of technology that I definitely didn't comprehend at 10 years old. I thought about it my whole life, but it turns out I think they were tagging me somehow, and that's why I was only up there for 7 minutes. I was tagged for a later visit.
The running in place, running in the air and not going anywhere. And the neighbor said it looked like he was, but he just wasn't going anywhere.
It meant that they were holding me in place and I was trying to run like hell. When I left that house, I was booking. And then I experienced the feeling how time would be changed. I know that sounds a little crazy, but of course the whole thing sounds crazy to a lot of people. I use this example in my book, Beyond the Stars. Like when I was in a car accident, my whole life flashed before me and everything was going in slow motion. But in reality, I'm going 100 miles an hour into a stone wall. It's just like a split second. And this was similar, where time was altered. And so many people said, oh, it was like a split second. So time was altered. When the beam came on me and I was running in place, everything went into slow motion. So as Jane is watching me run full speed but not move anywhere, everything broke down into milliseconds, every detail. And that allowed me to observe the UFO, to try to take a look at this whole thing, and then remember the whole part where my hands jerked back and I took in that breath and bam, I was gone.
In Melanie's interview, she said that she never met him, but the minute she did, she felt an immediate connection.
Yes, 100%. In high school, she was older than me, so I only saw her maybe that one time when I first saw her. I opened the door and she was there, and it was just like this, you know, I get my hairs go straight up in my arm when I think about it. And I was a freshman in high school. I opened the door and there she was. I never really ran into her after that. You know, maybe I saw her in a passing, but not really. I just never made an acquaintance. I just knew who she was. And it wasn't until later on. And then all of a sudden we met up again. And it was like, it's like we've been talking with each other our whole lives. Pretty bizarre. I feel very fortunate to have met Melanie afterwards. It was a very healing process for me. And Melanie worked very hard on healing herself as well. So I'm very proud of Melanie.
Thank you, Tom Warner, for your answers to Carla's questions. And I see here, Carla, you have a couple questions for Tom Reed.
I felt so bad that his mother had to shut down the restaurant and sell it and leave town when that was her Norman Rockwell type of living that she longed for. And it just was sad that this event was something that caused her to lose sight of that. And that's terrible. He mentioned that when he and his family saw the spaceship, it was rising up out of the river, and then they felt like they were underwater. I just found that so amusing that he would mention the fact that they felt like they were underwater, which made me think maybe it took them back underwater instead of up into the sky.
Selling the diner broke my mother's heart. There's no question. That was everything to her. We still owned it for a year or so after moving. However, it was never the same. It was so cool at the time to grow up in such a nostalgic jukebox-inspired diner with the shakes and everything, but it still became a nightmare, and I still get an odd feeling, or maybe it's a subtle hurt when I walk into an authentic style diner or a family-run eatery, I guess. My mother was followed a lot. My father did die in questionable circumstances on the same day a case was mentioned at the United Nations. And all that information can be found on ufopark.org. And yes, I was also hit by a tractor trailer truck and left for dead in 2006. Another question, do you think maybe you were taken underwater during the encounter? Water in the area is not very deep. I'm more inclined to think underground, as there are many government manufacturing facilities in the area, not to mention old abandoned missile sites.
I love the fact that his mother and grandmother were placed in the car in the wrong seats, and that the grandmother never drove, but she was in the driver's seat. That, to me, was powerful. Just wondering if the grandmother ever spoke about it. I know his mom did, and he did. Just wondering about the grandmother.
We all recall flashes or moments and have some recall. My grandmother would talk about not being able to wake anyone up and how she nearly panicked to find an area large enough to turn the station wagon around, and she did not even own a car at the time. She did drive on occasion, but she was like 100 pounds and 5 foot tall, and the station wagon was a lot for her to operate back in the day. They were bigger cars. I'd say her family has always wrestled with the fact that my grandmother had to start the car. Shortly after, she became very private. She lost her sense of humor, wit, that spark she had. She was by far the most negatively affected, I would say.
Thank you, Carla, for those great questions. Coming up is going to be some questions and comments I received over the internet. I will read the questions that came in. I'll direct them to Tom Warner, Tom Reed, and Melanie Kirchdorfer. The first question is to Tom Reed and to Tom Warner. The question is from Wesley Barnett from Denver, Colorado. Do you believe that they are still out there?
100% yes. And thank you for that question. You know, my whole life I had these bizarre incidences. That September 1st, 1969, it wasn't the start of it, and it wasn't the end of it. It's continued my whole entire life of these bizarre instances. And for me to try to understand why all these bizarre happenings took place, and then for myself to take it all in, and then try to make sense of the whole thing. And my only thing is I realized that I was a messenger and I had to deliver that message. And it's not easy coming forward. I mean, this is something that, you know, took me most of my life to be able to finally decide to come forward. And if it wasn't for unsolved mysteries, I probably wouldn't have.
Thank you, Tom Warner. Tom Reed?
My son has tested above coincidental chance with regard to remote viewing and has his heightened aptitude documented by the Miami Children's Hospital and his gifted school program. These papers and other documents were also turned over to Unsolved, but cut from the show. There is a lot regarding our family and the paranormal activity and some of the O negative blood, you know, groups that we have, O negative, AB negative, A negative, you know, what's the seemingly paranormal activity in our home now. So do we contribute that to our history? Yes, I do.
The next question from Wesley Barnett from Denver, Colorado. Since 1969, have you had any more encounters or still feel that you are being targeted? Tom Warner?
2 weeks after this, I had a second encounter and I lost 45 minutes of time. And on that particular encounter, someone ID'd me on the UFO. And so, yeah, there were more encounters. None where I was actually seeing the spaceship, but I did have three instances where I had contact with human-alien hybrids. And you'll say, how do you know they're human-alien hybrids? They didn't blink. And humans had to blink. And the other thing was that talk with mental telepathy. They didn't talk. They made it quite clear. Extraordinary way of communicating, and definitely a type of being that was able to do that was a human-alien hybrid, and they're pretty impressive.
Tom Reed?
Our family has been involved in a few, mostly prior to 1969, 66 and 67. My brother was also involved in the Kokomo boom in Indiana, which I think was around 2009. Don't quote me on that, but it was around that time.
The next question is for Tom Reed from Pixie Howard out of New York. Did your family ever receive any death threats after the 1969 incident?
Yeah, in 2005, I was nearly killed on December 19th when my parked car was struck by a tractor-trailer truck. This took place just 10 months before my father, a lawyer and selectman, lost his life. I was also run off the road with my lawyer, Kessler, following a meeting with the district attorney's office.
The next question, again, is to Tom Reed from William from Little Rock, Arkansas. What are your plans for the future? Are you writing a book or a movie?
To be quite honest with you, my plans include the expansion of our judgment-free UFO park, a free the public park that pays tribute to the local witnesses and my late father, a place that exemplifies peace and validation.
The next question is for Melanie Kirchdorfer from Peter Jackson. He's from Ocala, Florida, and the question is, do you still talk to your mother today about the incident?
I have a strange relationship with my mom. A lot of it has to do with this whole subject and her lying to me for all those years. So when this finally came out about 2 years ago, when she called me to go to the Historical Society and I found out she had been lying to me, I had to go for PTSD hypnosis to clear it all up for myself. And the hypnosis, I had to go for 8 to 10 weeks. I have all the CDs on it. When she finally found out all of this, she finally admitted to my sister and said to my sister, why didn't I ever believe her? And my sister said, I don't know why you didn't believe her, Mom. We were telling you this all along, and you never listened to her. And even I saw the little gray man, and you know that she came home early that morning and told us this, but she just didn't believe her. You told her not to talk about it. Apparently, she used to say that my brother had imaginary friends. But I was the middle child, and I was the one that was the independent one that she really didn't get along with as much. So I moved out at 17, and I'm really not close with her. But I did hear from my sister that she's happy that I'm finally coming forward and telling my truth, and she wishes that she had listened to me in the beginning. And she was the one that told me to go to the Historical Society and talk about it. So I've always had my sister watching my back because we shared a room together. So my sister knew what was going on. She always was there for me. She said to my mom, why do you think she didn't want to go to school? Why do you think she used to pretend she left for school and she would hide on the back porch? Because she was so traumatized, Mom. And I guess my mom felt pretty bad that she never listened to me, and she always made me lie about everything. I was actually locked in the basement one night, and that they found me sleepwalking. I don't know what else to say because I don't have a good relationship. I hear all this through my sister. I hope that helped.
The next question is for Tom Reed. This will be a two-part question. The first part is from Amanda Ford from Houston, Texas. And her question is, why wasn't your brother in the Unsolved Mysteries Berkshire's UFO episode? The second part of that question is from Frankie Johnson from Denver, Colorado. Was anything left out of the episode that was important? So I think those two questions go together. Tom Reed?
Matthew declined because he lost his trust in documentaries. He said, sure, Unsolved promised they will present our official state documents, but mark my words, Tom, they won't. And sure enough, they didn't. And although they were filmed, scanned, and were hand-delivered, they were all cut out of the episode. My mother nor brother will now never do another show again. They're done. My mother only opted to bill on camera with Unsolved because our documents and the credentials that my father held and was able to see this case mentioned before the UN, that was why my mother opted to go on camera. It was a way for her to pay tribute to her late husband who lost his life at 54 years old, again on the same day that she was mentioned at the UN. It was through his efforts that this became state inductive in a lot of ways, as well as our diner played a part in it too. But for this reason alone, she agreed to go on camera, and she watched the episode with me, and her face dropped, and she teared up and walked out of the room because not one single document was shown. And that was the only reason that she opted to go on the show. And so, of course, Matthew calls up and says, "See, I told you."
The next question is from Jimmy Pillar. He is from Anchorage, Alaska, and his question is to Tom Warner. How was it working with the others that also experienced the UFO encounters?
Everyone did a terrific job. You know, the Reeds, Tom and his mom, and, you know, Melanie and Jane Green. Everyone did a terrific job. Everyone was so brave coming forward. I'm very proud of everybody, what they did.
Another question for you, Tom Warner, from Brenda Spencer from San Francisco. Are you selling your paintings?
I'm sure she's referring to the UFO painting that I did. There will be prints available, and I'll give you links when we're ready on that, because everything's going to go up at the same time. There's going to be two prints. There's going to be the book cover print, which is a terrific piece of artwork, and also the original painting I did is up for sale. And, you know, if anybody wants to ask me about the original, we can discuss that anytime. You know, I'm very easily approachable.
The next question is for Tom Reed. It's from Betty Zillinger from Savannah, Georgia. What is your plans now since the Berkshires episode was released? What is your plans for the future?
To be quite honest with you, my plans include the expansion of our judgment-free UFO park, a free the public park that pays tribute to the local witnesses and my late father, a place that exemplifies peace and validation.
The next question is to Melanie Kirchdorfer from Ralph Moore from Brooklyn, New York. His question is, did they do anything to you on the spacecraft that hurt you in any way? And do you remember anything from being on the craft?
I know that there were little brain men when I was a young child, but I remember being levitated, and I remember being in a room. It was metallic. It was almost glass looking. I can remember seeing a red glow outside through the metallic. I'm sure it was the lights outside. And I remember being on a table. I could not move my head. My head was not able to be moved, but my eyes I could move. I couldn't see a lot because it was only my eyes that I could move. Now, I know a lot of people say that they couldn't hear anything because it was so quiet. Yes, it was quiet being levitated to wherever they were taking me, but when I was on the ship, there was noise in my head, and I describe it as being in an MRI machine or a CAT scan, that clicking sound, and to this day, this happens to me in my ear. I've even gone to the doctor to find out why this is happening, and they've given me MRIs to find out why it's happening, and they can't figure it out. It happens to me all the time. It's like this click, 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 click in my left ear. It drives me crazy. It'll just come on all of a sudden, and that's what was happening, this clicking. It's hard for me to describe it. And it still happens. So I hope that's helpful to you thinking about it. It probably came from Stockbridge because a friend of mine that I've spoken to since then has said that he saw six ships in Stockbridge that night of 69. And that would have been right before Jane saw it. And then it probably went over the mountain to Lake Mansfield, where we saw it, which would have been around 7:30 in the evening, and that would have been when I was taken. And then I remember levitating over Berkshire Heights, and Tom's house is right near Berkshire Heights, where he was taken. And then Tom Reed's family is on the Sheffield route, and then people saw it further down in Sheffield. So I believe that's the route
that it came.
Thank you, Melanie Kirchdorfer. And before we get into the last few comments that I received through social media, I'm going to start it off with Paula Bianchi. She is the author of the blog Lucy in the Afterlife from thisweirdchicksblog.com.
It was very interesting. I've always been interested in UFOs and aliens since I read Communion by Whitney Strieber. And I just couldn't believe, you know, all these years later, and they still hadn't talked about it with each other. That was so interesting. And I loved how Melanie and how the electrical stuff would mess up around her. I found that very interesting. And the part where they say that everything wasn't included, things that they wanted in there, at first I was a little upset about that, but then after listening to Marcus and the other, Doug and Justin, I realized, you know, not everything could get in there. I just love talking with you, Al. You're so great. I love these interviews. You did such a good job.
Thank you, Paula Bianchi. Closing out the show today, I received numerous questions and comments on the Berkshires. A lot of the questions were the same questions, so I kind of had to pick. It was like kind of a random, just throwing the thing up in a hat and picking out who. But everybody had great questions. I want to thank everybody for submitting their comments and questions. A comment that came in from Hillsdale, New York, from an anonymous sender. I was driving through Great Barrington. I saw seven lights at first in the sky in a V formation, then just three, then just one. And the one just sat there for almost 5 minutes. I called it into the police department, and the dispatcher wanted to send me out an officer to take me home. In other words, I was intoxicated. I decided not to do that, and I just left. And I kept this under my hat for 50 years, until I saw the Unsolved Mysteries Berkshire's UFO. And I decided to share this with you. Another comment that came in from Brenda Spencer, and she left a question earlier. Brenda is from St. Mary's, West Virginia. It was my 21st birthday, September 1st, 1969. I was sitting on my front porch, watching the sunset. I had a couple of glasses of wine, but I definitely was not intoxicated. And then I saw seven lights in a V formation about 100 feet in the air. I sat there and I watched it and I watched it. They weren't moving fast, but it was such a beautiful sight with that sunset. I didn't call anybody, but it was a birthday I will never forget. Another anonymous comment was from Stockbridge, Massachusetts. This one kind of touched me in a way. I had to share this one. I was 27 years old, heading to the Berkshires Mountains to commit suicide. I couldn't take it any longer. You see, I've always battled migraine headaches. I was hospitalized numerous times for these headaches. And that evening, I decided I just couldn't take it anymore. And I decided to end it all by driving to the Berkshires. But on my way to the mountains, I seen something very beautiful right above me. It was a colorful light, so it was just mesmerizing. And I stopped, got out of the car, and a light shined down on me from the craft. It wasn't anything I've ever seen before, but it was just, the lights were just colors I just can't explain. The next thing I know, I was back in my car, in my driveway, at my house. I don't know how I got there. I don't remember even getting there. I don't know if I was taken from the car. I don't know. I just remember standing in the light that shined down on me and then back at my house. But one thing for sure, I never had another migraine headache. I felt very energized, like I was reborn. And one thing I do remember after watching Tom Warner on the Berkshires episode, he said the voice just told him to go home. And this voice also, mental telepathy, just said, go home. Go home. But I never had another migraine headache. I'm in perfect health. And I want to thank Tom Warner for sharing his story. And actually all of them. Tom Reed, Melanie, Jane, and I hope a lot of other people can come forward to share their story. And the last comment is from Z. Z is from Japan. And here's her comment. If you believe in God or a great spirit that created Earth and every living creature on it, then couldn't it be possible that that great spirit, that great creator, could create the entire universe? Why would God, my theory is, this God, this great creator, not only created Earth and the entire universe, but everything in the solar systems. Now, if he could do that, then isn't it possible that we are not alone? I want to thank all of my guests that were on the show, everybody that submitted their comments. I want to thank my roundtable guests, Tambray Ross, Beth Garcia, Katie Brown, Joshua Horton, Carla Davies, Cindy Martinez, Paula Bianchi, Tom Warner, Tom Reed, and Melanie Kirchdorfer. Thank you, thank you, thank you. This was a difficult show to work on with getting everybody involved in the roundtable, and I'm very, very fortunate. And also their generosity of answering these questions from people from all around the world sending in their comments and questions. I'm your host, Al Cooley of Ghosts in the Valley, and I look forward to talking to you again.